Well, Democratic presidential hopeful Senator Kamala Harris of California, as noted earlier during this broadcast, delivered a defiant response to recent media reports that her flagging campaign is crippled by internal disputes and is on the ropes. Let's review political developments with a West Coast journalist, our friend Mark Baraback, national political reporter, Los Angeles Times, LATimes.com. Well, welcome, Mark. What about the senator? Is she very close to being like Beto O'Rourke on the way out, or could something still spark her? What do you think?
Well, I think it's too early to rule anybody out. I'm old enough to remember when John Kerry took out a mortgage on his house 6 weeks before he won the Iowa caucuses. So, you know, things happen. Things could turn around. That said, she's not in a great position. I think it's fair to say she's in a world of hurt. The internal scrapping and fighting being just one of them. I mean, I was not there, but I had a colleague who attended the state Democratic Party convention, which was held this weekend in Long Beach, and a lot of the talk and the bars and the after parties and such was about whether Kamala Harris should get out before the California primary on March 3rd, thus sparing herself embarrassment. It's quite a remarkable come down. I mean, she started, she launched a campaign on Martin Luther King Day. In January, 22,000 people showed up in Oakland, the town where she was raised, and quite impressive start. She was definitely a top tier. She might have even been the front runner at that point, and it's just been a slow, steady decline since then. You know, she had that bump this summer when she went after Joe Biden in the first debate, but it's her numbers are I would say embarrassingly bad at this point. 1% or so in New Hampshire, 3% in Iowa. This is not the trajectory of a winning campaign.
Well, something former Mayor Michael Bloomberg did made me think of Kamala Harris, and that is he basically did a mea culpa, rare for him, maybe not as rare as for President Trump, but rare, saying that he was wrong about stop and frisk as mayor of New York City, which, of course, has cost him minority support. And, of course, I thought of Kamala Harris in that connection with her record as a prosecutor in California. So you start to think whether there's any room for a candidate like that, whether Kamala Harris or Bloomberg, assuming he's going to jump, and it looks like he's going to. Of course, the difference is he's got tons of his own money. But that could be something that's anathema to many Democrats as well.
Well, you hit on something that is a real problem. In fact, I think if there's a central problem at the core of Kamala Harris' campaign, it's that neither fish nor fowl thing. It's like, is she a prosecutor who's going to run as a former prosecutor and embrace that record, which is very popular, I will tell you, among some Democratic voters. I was just over in Arizona reporting on a story, and people liked the fact she was a prosecutor. She thought they thought that made her look tough. And then you have African-American voters, many of whom have been on the side of shall we say, policies that have been oppressive, that have put in jail a lot of black and brown members of the community. And they feel they see prosecutors as oppressors. And so that's a real problem that Kamala Harris has, was trying to walk that fine line. And she hasn't managed to do so. She's put the pedal down on one side, sometimes on the other side. And it just left voters with this muddle. Who is she and what does she stand for? That's not at all clear.
What about this notion that the money people are really out to unravel two senators from New England who don't need to be mentioned by name? And in doing so, Biden remains doing well, but stumbling some. And Mayor Pete has had a meteoric rise in Iowa. And who knows who could be the other centrist in there, or would-be centrist?
Well, that's an opportunity. I mean, look, I look at this stuff a bit skeptically. To me, it's like rotisserie baseball. You know, it's terrific that your team is in first or second place, but, you know, it doesn't matter until the votes are cast. It's all speculation. You know, Elizabeth Warren, it was going to be Joe Biden, and then Elizabeth Warren, and now it's Pete Buttigieg, and we've had all this up and down. And like I said, it's like following the standings in rotisserie baseball. It's interesting. I'm not sure it's meaningful until any actual votes are cast. We're now less than 100 days away in Iowa. I know that's a long time to wait. And I promise you there's going to be another twist or two now and then.
I promise you. Anything else I haven't asked you about that you think bears mentioning here?
Well, we have the debate coming up on Wednesday night. It's going to be real interesting. We talked a little about Pete Buttigieg and his rise. One poll, it's only one, but it tracks data that suggests that Pete Buttigieg is doing very, very well in Iowa. He has not been at center stage. I think that could change. Elizabeth Warren is going to be coming under questioning, I'm certain, for more details and more explanation of her Medicaid for All plan and Medicare for All plan, excuse me, and what that stands for. So, you know, these debates have sort of frozen the field as we pause and wait for them. We got one coming up Wednesday night. We'll see. They haven't dramatically reset the race, but they have sort of shaped the agenda. So it's going to be interesting to see what we're talking about Wednesday, Thursday morning, and thereafter.
Well, final question quickly. You've had a lot of talk in California among the politicos you interview that Senator Harris, assuming she's still in the race, and all these other senators will have to be in Washington for the impeachment trial, presuming they get it from the House, and all indications are they will, in January and maybe even early February, right ahead of the caucuses and the primaries.
I don't think we're going to be too happy about it. It's like the old Victorian thing about kids. They're going to be seen but not heard. You know, they're going to not have any role. They have to sit very politely at their desk, their hands folded. I don't think that's where they want to be when it comes down to the wire in Iowa, New Hampshire.
Oh, the fortunes of a senator, yes. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Al.
Nice talking to you. Mark Baraback, national political correspondent, Los Angeles Times, LATimes.com, live from San Francisco, here in Delaware, WDEL. Another week of public presidential impeachment hearings in the House, and the suggestion, that the president could appear before the committee, who knows? And President Trump said to be livid with his Secretary of State that so many impeachment witnesses have obviously come from the Department of State. I mean, if you think about it, any ambassador, any diplomat. Mayor Pete Buttigieg, as we noted, surging in the CNN poll in Iowa, but Joe Biden so far seemingly holding steady in South Carolina, which represents his firewall for now. Eleanor Cliff, columnist of the Daily Beast, longtime regular panelist of the McLaughlin Group, and you see her on TV from time to time and all that. And so, Eleanor, I don't know which one bites your imagination the most. Go ahead. What do you think is the most important thing to think about?
Well, I think that the likelihood of President Trump taking the stand in the impeachment hearings at the stage they're in now is about as much chance as his eagerness to talk to Robert Mueller, remember that, or his insistence that we would see his tax returns someday. He would love to show them, except they're under audit. You know, that's not going to happen. And I think the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is under a lot of pressure because the president is blaming him for this parade of State Department people, all highly credentialed and very credible, you know, coming forward to document that what the president did on that call.
Well, a critic might say that Mike Pompeo has himself to blame. He hasn't defended his own diplomats.
Well, that's right. And I think he'd like to duck out now and go back to Kansas and run for the Senate. But it's that old story, the chicken's coming home to roost. I mean, Pompeo was in the forefront of the Benghazi investigation, and the Democrats are now using a lot of the tactics and rules that he put in place and that he pioneered. And he's in a very difficult position now because, as Secretary of State, he really should be standing up for his people. But if he stands up for his people, that would put him in direct confrontation with the president. And he might not get fired right away, but he'd likely get frozen out. And, you know, we really, really don't need any more top officials, you know, frozen out. This president is too much on his own, in my opinion. And while certainly Secretary of State Pompeo has made a number of mistakes, in my view, I mean, he still has an adult view of the world, and I'd rather him in the inner circle than outside of it.
Yeah, would be in his place. To you, longtime observer, I don't mean to date you here, but you certainly remember Clinton impeachment, and I don't know how much you were able to follow Nixon, but what has been the most surprising thing so far to you to emerge from the hearing?
To emerge from the hearing is the sort of steady progress that the Democrats are making in building a case. I mean, it's not flashy, but I think they are one by one chipping away at the Republican defenses, that, you know, that it's hearsay, that nobody had direct knowledge. I think that argument's going to be blown up this week, that what the president did was normal, and he's really concerned with corruption around the world. I think that's been exposed as a falsehood. So I don't think it's all that it's not groundbreaking what happens every day in these hearings, but the testimony from Masha Yovanovitch was very compelling, especially I think to women who, you know, watched this sort of cool professionalism and how she was clearly stunned by the way she was treated. This president doesn't do that well with women, suburban women in particular.
I could just exacerbate that. I hear you. I hadn't heard anyone else bring that up, and that's true. Well, the presidential race, Mayor Pete, for now surging in Iowa, apparently. Joe Biden holding on in South Carolina. Of course, that firewall could erode if Mayor Pete and the others do extremely well over Biden in Iowa and New Hampshire. What do you think?
It wouldn't surprise me if Mayor Pete won in Iowa, or he could be the Howard Dean of this campaign season, where he's the rising star, yeah. And then suddenly he's not. He's an impressive young man, and I think he's going to be around for a good while.
The only thing is, he seems more measured than Howard Dean. That's my observation.
That's true. That's true. There's a debate Wednesday night in Atlanta, and that's going to put the spotlight on Stacey Abrams, who ran a very credible and close race for governor there, and she's not made a secret of her availability to serve on a ticket with whichever Democrat emerges. And I think she'd be a powerful addition to any Democratic ticket. So I'd keep my eye on her as well as the contenders on the stage on Wednesday evening.
As long as, finally, Eleanor, we're talking about the South, let's talk about the governor's race in Louisiana. President Trump went in there. He did not have coattails against the governor.
No, and the turnout, I actually wrote a piece for the Daily Beast about that, which posted on Friday and said a blue wave likely to roll over Louisiana. If you looked at the early voting numbers, you could see that the early voters in Louisiana were blacker than the population as a whole and less Republican than the population as a whole. So, the turnout resembled the Obama phenomenon, which it's what Democrats dream of. I don't know if it can be repeated in another place, but also the governor there is about as conservative as you could get as a Democrat, very conservative on social issues.
Yes.
But he had expanded Medicaid in the state, so that was important.
And that's kind of the traditional on moral issues, but liberal populist on bottom line things like health care.
That's right. That's a good recipe for Democrats who want to win in more conservative areas.
But does it affect then the nomination battle, where the not so progressive candidates can say, "See, we can't just give up these places"?
Well, that's right. But it also shows that the president, by going in there and sort of basically saying, you can't let this happen to me, you've got to vote for me. And the Republican in each case, in Louisiana and in Kentucky, basically tying themselves to the president and running on anti-impeachment. That didn't work. And I think the Democrats are a little nervous about an impeachment backlash. I mean, I don't think the politics of this are all that clear for either side.
No, I agree.
And this showed that impeachment didn't take the Republicans across the finish
line. Well, I go back to ordinary people. I think a lot of them realize governor has very little to do with the national political scene. But have to go. Thank you, Eleanor. Great talking to you again.
All right. Thank you. Be well. Okay.
All right. Thank you. I'll do my best. Eleanor Clift with us from the Daily Beast, live on Delaware.